And this is Nathan Ruggles here with you on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us today. And we'd like to send some thanks out to UFCW as well as the steelworkers. These two unions, among many others, support our programming here at the Union Edge. They're sponsors here, keeping us on the air. And you can as well if you become a member of our Insider's Edge. You just head out to our website at theunionedge.com. You can find out more. Next up here on the line, we have Stephen Overly with Politico. We've got a story here about what's going on out of Silicon Valley and the response to all these hate groups that we've been hearing about and the incident in Charlottesville. Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. And the story is very interesting. A lot of controversy. We have this members of Congress who are trying to pass a law aimed at harmful online content, and we have these companies that have been resisting it, but now we have a greater controversy due to this incident in Charlottesville, correct?
That's right. As we've seen over the last week, there have been a number of examples of tech companies cracking down on websites or users who they say engage in hate speech or other behavior that violates their terms of service. Just to give you a few quick examples, we saw Airbnb, the home sharing site, terminate accounts of some users who they believe were renting rooms in Charlottesville. We saw Google, GoDaddy, and Cloudflare, deny access to their servers for a neo-Nazi publication called The Daily Stormer, and so many other companies, Facebook, Twitter, even OkCupid, the dating site, all have sort of taken some kind of action since the rally in Charlottesville.
So we have all these examples, and obviously there are groups that are applauding this work that they're doing to make it more difficult for these hate groups who are promoting violence to organize and spread their language of violence and spread the ideas of violence against these groups and hateful language. However, for these companies, it's problematic because of what they've their response to possible legislation, correct?
That's right. So, as you said, a lot of the speech that, or a lot of the speech and the actions that these companies have been taking action against, is pretty reprehensible to the average decent person. But it raises questions about how much power these companies do have to sort of censor speech and censor activity, and then it complicates matters here in Washington because right now they're fighting legislation that would amend something called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. What that provision is so important to the tech industry because it essentially prevents them from being held accountable for actions taken by people on their networks. So they effectively don't have to act as gatekeepers. But there are some lawmakers here in Washington who want to make amendments to that law specifically to go after tech companies who know that sex trafficking is being facilitated by their networks. This comes out of a congressional investigation into a website called Backpage.com, which has been accused of facilitating sex trafficking through advertisements on their online forums. And so you have lawmakers who want to go after tech companies that knowingly allow this to happen on their networks, and you have tech companies pushing back saying, we should not be held accountable for what our users do. We provide these platforms to have the free exchange of information, and any sort of regulation that curtails that would be harmful to the internet as a whole.
And in terms of that Communications Decency Act, that's been around for a couple of decades, right? This is the environment, the law that they've been sphere that they've been operating in for some time, correct?
Exactly. That's been around since, I believe, 1996. And many say sort of, the internet we know today, websites like Facebook or YouTube and Google, part of the reason they exist is they've had this protection. They've been able to flourish and attract a lot of users and also, create a lot of content because they have not had sort of onerous regulation from Washington. And that's why they're very hesitant for any legislation that might change that.
And this legislation that's been proposed is specifically on the issue of sex trafficking. Is this a Republican sponsor, Democratic sponsor? Is it bipartisan? What kind of support does this currently have in Congress before
sure,
this big blow up?
Absolutely. It is a bipartisan initiative. You know, we've seen bills introduced in both the House and the Senate with Democratic and Republican support, and that support has grown. We've seen, you know, some state attorney generals speak out in favor of this legislation, as well as a number of advocacy groups. Advocacy groups around sex trafficking or exploited women and children have really spoken out in favor of this legislation, which, as you noted, does specifically address sex trafficking. But we've also seen pushback from the tech industry, both individual companies as well as trade groups, who, you know, by no means condone sex trafficking. You know, they're very sure to point out that's not what they're trying to protect. What they're trying to protect is sort of this sense of a free internet that is not heavily regulated, where ideas and information can be exchanged. And so that's kind of the tension that's being set up here in D.C.
Well, and it's interesting because on one hand, you know, sex trafficking being an explicitly, you know, illegal activity that is, you know, they're using these platforms for breaking the law as opposed to using these platforms for speech, which is generally protected unless, of course, then things get complicated when we're talking about advocating for violent activity like took place in Charlottesville.
Exactly. And that's, you know, one of the big questions is, you know, essentially these internet companies do have a lot of discretion to determine what, you know, what is permissible on their networks and what isn't. You know, they all have terms of service, the sort of long text that you read before you agree to create an account or download an app.
And we all read that, right?
Right. Exactly. I'm sure people read every word of all, you know, and all the legal jargon in those documents. But essentially, it's sort of governing what can and cannot happen on their networks, and they have a lot of discretion to change that as they see fit. And so, you know, as you say, sex trafficking is illegal, and one of the arguments that internet companies make is, you know, that there should be a number of ways to prosecute those who engage in sex trafficking, and that there are other ways to do that don't involve, you know, regulating the internet or sort of making tech companies the gatekeepers for what content is allowed on their websites.
Well, and this is very much a 21st century problem. We have these private companies that have established these forums where so much of our speech now is concentrated in a public way. So it's a private space, but it's also a public space. And the question of how that space can be regulated certainly is incredibly important for not just free speech, but obviously for law enforcement as well in this country. So this seems very difficult to get your head around what's the best way to proceed. I saw mention that in your story, they have this idea of community standards that these corporations are using currently. But how is that defined? Is that defined very precisely, this idea of community standards that they're operating under and whether they censor or don't censor something?
Not terribly precisely. You know, every sort of website or online community has kind of different standards. You have websites like Reddit, for example, where the community and users themselves often create rules that kind of govern, you know, what kind of speech is allowed in their forums. And then you have, you know, websites or services like Airbnb or Uber, for example, that have standards around, you know, discrimination and bias on their platforms. But again, these are all things that the companies really can, you know, interpret for themselves and enforce for themselves. But you know, to illustrate sort of your point about how complicated this is, you know, last week we saw this group called the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is a digital rights group, you know, a big advocate of kind of the open internet.
Yes,
but even they, you know, even they were raising some big questions about this and sort of, you know, questions about how much discretion internet companies have to control, you know, speech and activity on their platform, when they should act as gatekeepers versus not acting as gatekeepers, and essentially making the point that, you know, this can become a slippery slope. You know, allow big companies to make these decisions, you know, not always with transparency, you know, what, you know, that's a calculus that has to be made. And, you know, they had a quote that I thought really sort of defined it well, which is they said, even for free speech advocates, you know, the situation is deeply fraught with emotional, logistical, and legal twists and turns.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, Stephen, we do have to wrap up. I'm sorry we're coming in the hour,
sure.
But thank you so much, Stephen Overly with Politico. Thanks for coming on and bringing a story today. You can head out to politico.com, I know, to reach you guys and hear more about what you're doing. Thanks for coming on. And this is Nathan Ruggles here with the Union Edge Labor Talk Radio. We'll be right back.